Morning. Okay, so a couple of you have programs, so that I'm going to talk from the section in the program on the Xinqin Ming. This is my 10th talk on the Xinqin Ming, Trusting Heart Mind, and I'm somewhere in the middle of it. Okay, so I'm going to read from it, as I've been doing, and then talk about what I've read. Those with limited views are fearful and irresolute. The faster they hurry, the slower they go. Clinging cannot be limited. Even to be attached to the idea of enlightenment is to go astray. So those with limited views are fearful and irresolute. Do you know anyone like that? Oh, we have a couple of people fessing up. So, I've been talking about that. Zen teachers have been talking about this for a long time, right? That the fear-based mind is limited. It's irresolute. It's scared. And it protects itself. And through our Zen practice, we have an opportunity, we have a chance to sort of go beyond that limitlessness, that limitedness, to limitlessness, and experience what Suzuki Roshi called beginner's mind. And Suzuki Roshi actually coined the term, but you see it in all the old literature. It's just that he coined the term, beginner's mind. So here's a story that I've read before, because I've read most of them before. A beginner's mind story. It happened just a few years ago to two young children in a family from Illinois. The 8-year-old daughter became ill and was diagnosed with a life-threatening blood disease. A search went out to find a donor of blood compatible with her own. As she weakened, they looked, and no donor could be found. Then it was discovered that her 6-year-old brother shared her rare blood type. The mother and their minister and the doctor sat down with the boy to ask if he would be willing to donate his blood to save the life of his sister. Much to their surprise, he did not answer right away. He wanted some time to think about it. 6-year-olds can be quite thoughtful at times. After a few days, he went to his mother and said, "Yes, I'll do that. I'll do it." The following day, the doctor brought both children to his clinic and placed them on cots next to each other. He wanted them to see how one was helping the other. First, he drew a half pint of blood from the young boy's arm. Then he moved it over to his sister's cot and inserted the needle so her brother could see the effect. In a few minutes, color began to pour back into her cheeks. Then the boy motioned for the doctor to come over. "The way you're looking at me, maybe I haven't read this before." He wanted to ask a question very quietly. "Will I start to die right away?" he asked. You see, when he had been asked to donate his blood to save the life of his sister, his 6-year-old mind understood the process literally. That's why he needed a few days to think about it. And then he simply gave what is in the heart of every human being to give when we are truly connected. Beginner's mind, when we are truly connected. And of course, we are truly connected already. But here is a pretty cool example, I think. So I've talked a lot about my first teacher, Suzuki Roshi, and his beginner's mind, and one his coining the term and his also demonstrating the behavior. Not self-consciously. Because a beginner is, well, I'll get into that later. So, a story that I've told before is about how he was an inspiration for me. In this tradition of practice, we have lots of inspirations. We have inspirations from the books we read, from our friends, from a six-year-old boy sometimes, from all kinds of places. And here's an inspirational story, which I have told at least four times before, maybe five, maybe six, maybe seven. My teacher, we had a student who sat with us who was going through a bad depression, really bad depression. And so her depression was so bad, it was anxious depression, that she really couldn't sit because it was anxious depression, if you know what that is. You'd probably rather not know, but most of us do know. And she couldn't sit. And and she was also a concert pianist, and it was very hard for her to do her practicing. But at least with her practicing, she could alleviate her anxiety. Wasn't just sitting facing a stupid wall. I mean, you know, so she could. So she couldn't sit for a while. I mean, she sat for a long time, but then it got so bad she couldn't sit. So one morning I saw Suzuki Roshi. We didn't call him Suzuki Roshi then. We didn't know the term Roshi. Alan Watts, the old Zen, you know, translator, said, "You should call him Roshi. That's the term." And we went and we said that to him, and he said, "Oh, that means old person." "I don't want you to call me old person." So actually, we didn't. We never called him that. But now, it's a deal, right, Roshi? So I saw him in the morning after breakfast, and he had his hippari on. If you guys know what hippari is, it's sort of the traveling clothes, Japanese traveling clothes, not for traveling formally, but, you know, for going out and doing stuff. Kind of an old hippari, and he had some bloomers on. You know, bloomers, right? And I said, where are you going? And he said, "Oh, I'm going to play tennis with Betty." And I said, "I didn't know you knew how to play tennis." He said, "I don't." And I said, and for some reason I came along. I don't know. It seemed to have always been around in those days. I don't know. I had a job, but I was always around. I just don't know. So I went out there, and of course Betty was a tennis player, and he had never played tennis before in his life. And there he was, and she would lob the ball over to him, and he would try to hit it. He had his black flapping hippari flapping around. He hit it sometimes. He hit it into the net. He hit it way up high. And he was getting a real kick out of it. He was really enjoying himself, and Betty was too. She was getting into it. She was hitting it back to him, and then she was hitting it really softly to him to see if he could return it. And they only played for maybe about 20 minutes, 25 minutes. But we all felt really good. We all felt really good. And he met her there. He met her there. He could meet her on the tennis court. He could meet her there. We don't know where we can meet people, but there's always a place to meet someone. And we don't necessarily have to wait till they do things our way, sitting in the zendo, to meet with them. The whole world is our zendo. So that's the beginner's mind. And I have 85 stories about it. But I won't tell any more. That's the beginner's mind. That's what you can discover. That's the limitless mind, through your meditation practice. This is a promise that I make you, that was made to me. It's not a hard promise for you to make at all. It's what we do. It's how we live. Not a hard promise to make, but it takes a dedication to meditation. Dedication to meditation. That's all it takes. In contrast to a farmer requested a Zen priest to recite sutras for his wife who had died. After the recitation was over, the farmer asked, "Do you think my wife will gain merit from this?" Not only your wife, but all sentient beings will benefit from the recitation of the sutras, answered the Zen priest. A good Zen priest, huh? If you say all sentient beings will benefit, said the farmer, my wife may be very weak and others will take advantage of her, getting her the benefit she should have. So please recite sutras just for her. The priest explained that it was the desire of a Buddhist to offer blessings and wish merit for every living being. Well, that's a fine teaching, concluded the farmer, but please make one exception. I have a neighbor who is rough and mean to me. Just exclude him from all those sentient beings. So, that's the fear-based mind, isn't it? That's the fear-based mind. That's the mind that is irresolute because it's so scared. And sometimes it's resolute, but its resolution is based on fear. Just exclude that person. Just exclude that person. Just those Tea Party people. My God. If we had them all here, they'd all have guns, right? After Tucson, they went out and bought more guns instead of less. Did you see anybody talking about more gun control? No. Gun purchase went up all over the United States. Wow. Let's exclude them. They're scary, aren't they? Woo! That's the mind. That's the limited mind. It's a limited mind that we all have. It's not a bad mind. It protects us. It's Darwinian. It has a Darwinian use. Survival of Tim. Perpetuation of Tim species. My own special species. We all have our own special species, right? But Zen practice is about stepping out of that. Falling out of that. Flying out of that. Letting it go. Do you believe me? You do. Cool. So I get to talk always about my grandkids because I give talks and I like my grandkids. So my grandsons, I have a grandson a year and a half and a grandson 5. So I'm with my grandsons in a very beautiful place where we have a swimming pool. And I won't get into that because then you won't pay attention to my talk. You'll go to that very beautiful place in your mind and forgetting this beautiful place. Right in the middle of. Of course, it warmed up today. Wow. Well, my 5-year-old grandson trying to learn how to swim, but he can't really swim. My 1.5-year-old grandson when he gets to the pool, he just likes to throw himself in the water, and I'm always there. So he throws himself at me, and I kind of taught him to do that, and it's cool. He hasn't learned about fear. He hasn't developed the Darwinian sense of that he needs to perpetuate his species, right? Yet about fear of water. But he connects it with me, so he would only throw his. So he has a little bit. He only does it when I'm there. Well, one day we're out by the pool, and he does it, and I'm not there. He just comes over to the pool, and he flings himself in. The pool, that part of the pool is only maybe 3.5 feet deep, but he ain't. He's 1.5, right? So he flings himself in the pool, and my 5-year-old grandson, who's right by him, flings himself in right after him. And then I fling myself in to get both of them, so I haul both of them out. And I said, Ethan, to my 5-year-old, what were you doing? He said, I wanted to save my brother. I said, well, you're going to have to learn how to swim first. So that's beginner's mind. But that all the day before and all the rest of the day, he wouldn't let Logan into his room because he had his train set all arranged. And he's got all the details of it. He's got the bridges. I think he's not like me. He's going to be some kind of architect or mechanic or something. Everything, all the trains, all the crossings, and Logan, you can't come in. No, Logan. Ah, you know. And his mom says, yeah, Logan, come in the room. It's a small house, but no. So there's the fear-based mind. There's the fear-based mind, and then he abandoned the fear-based mind in that circumstance. Not very long. Not very long. For us as meditators, our goal is to know how to tap into that beginner's mind on a regular moment-to-moment basis. And we do that through sitting. We don't do that through anything else but sitting meditation, walking meditation, meditation. Meditation. That's how we do it. So that we can disidentify with the fear-based mind. We can see it and then disidentify with it. That disidentification does not involve any thought at all. No thought at all. Because when the thought about the fear-based mind is just more of the same. It's a disidentification that comes through the process of watching your thoughts and slowing down your thoughts in the meditation process. And it's not unique to Buddhism. It's not unique to Zen. So, those with limited views are fearful and irresolute. The faster they hurry, the slower they go. Clinging cannot be limited. Even to be attached to the idea of enlightenment is to go astray. Just let things be in their own way, and there will be no coming nor going. Obey the nature of things, and you will walk freely and undisturbed. Oh boy, that sounds nice, doesn't it? Just obey the nature of things, and we'll walk freely and undisturbed. So beginner's mind has some different features to it that I just made up yesterday as I was preparing for this talk, but they're probably in Scripture 32 someplace, or 32.2 in the Lotus Sutra. You can probably find them there. I'm just kidding, you know. What do I know? Anyway, these are features I talk about all the time, but here they go. Here we go. Features of the beginner's mind, okay? One feature. Now, here are two features. Two features of the beginner's mind from Chuangzi. Everybody, most of you know Chuangzi by now, the Taoist, the great Taoist sage who was Sung San, who wrote this. Obviously, he had hung out with Chuangzi. So let's see, where is it? Chuangzi. In the age when life on earth was full, no one paid any special attention to worthy men, nor did they single out the man of ability. Rulers were simply the highest branches on the trees, and people were like deer in the woods. They were honest and righteous without realizing that they were doing their duty. They loved each other and did not know this was love of neighbor. They deceived no one, yet did not know they were men to be trusted. They were reliable and did not know that this was good faith. They lived freely together, giving and taking, and did not know they were generous. For this reason, their deeds have not been narrated. They made no history. They made no history. Beginner's mind doesn't try to make history. Doesn't try to make history because it's just involved, just encased. It may make history, but it's not trying. So the first two features then that he talks about are generosity. Generosity. Beginner's mind is generous. It's just generous. That 6-year-old boy was generous with his blood to his sister, wasn't he? He was generous. He was even willing. He had to think a while about it, but he decided he was willing to die. He was willing to die at that moment. And we all have that capacity to be that, to act from that. We all have that capacity. And sometimes it may seem in our meditation that we get farther away rather than closer. I know that. I know that. But nobody said it'd be easy. I sure didn't. Although it is easy. It's easy in that when you finally disidentify just for a moment, you see how easy it is. That's your beginner's mind. You see it. And there's a freeing in just the seeing. Also, second feature of beginner's mind, it's not self-conscious. Beginner's mind is not self-conscious. Ms. Suzuki Roshi playing tennis was not self-conscious. I mean, that's why we all wanted to go gawk at him, because we know he'd just be flailing around out there, giggling and falling on his butt. Not self-conscious. Beginner's mind is not. I guarantee. Beginner's mind is calm. It's calm. It doesn't matter what happens. It's calm. It just feels calm, wherever it is, whatever the situation is. Just calm. Here's a story. A businessman needed to attend a conference in a faraway city, and he decided to travel on country roads rather than the freeways so he could enjoy a relaxing journey. After some hours of traveling, he realized he was hopelessly lost. Seeing a farmer tending his field on the side of the road, he stopped to ask for directions. Oh, this is not the story that I wanted to do. Oh, no, this is good enough story, you guys. This is a good enough story. He stopped to ask for directions. "Can you tell me how far it is to Chicago?" he asked the farmer. "Well, I don't rightly know," the farmer replied. "Well, can you tell me how far I am from New York?" the businessman questioned again. "Well, I don't rightly know," the farmer again replied. "Can you at least tell me the quickest way to the main road?" the exasperated businessman said. "No, I don't rightly know," the farmer again answered. "You really don't know much at all, very much at all, do you?" blurted the impatient businessman. "Nope, but I ain't lost." That's the beginner's mind, you guys. You ain't lost. We're never lost, because we experience a calmness with what is. Just with what is. Just let things be in their own way, and there will be neither coming nor going. Obey the nature of things, and you walk freely and undisturbed. So, generous, not self-conscious, calm. Joyful. Beginner's mind is joyful. It's joyful. Doesn't matter what happens, it's joyful. These days, as some of you know, I'm up and down a lot. I'm in bed a lot because I have health issues. I'm in bed a lot. And of course, I would rather be here. I would rather be doing things on the one hand. On the other hand, the joy that's not of time never leaves us. So if I'm breathing in my bed, the joy's there. Just breathing, just looking at the covers, it's the same joy. Now, if I start talking to myself about, "Oh, those guys are here, I'm there, what are they doing, da 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 da, I wish I'll never get better," then I've lost it. Then I'm back in the fear mind. Then all I have to do is come back to my breathing, and I'm back to the innate joy, which is the center of being, which is the beginner's mind itself. Always here, always available. And it seems so far off when we get lost. We get so far lost, so far gone, and it's right here. Always, always. Life or death, misery or joy. It's not dualistic. It's a simple, calm joy that doesn't know it's joy. That's why it's generous. That's why it's generous. It doesn't know. But it doesn't have to know. Because it bees. I don't know what word to use. That's not a proper word. and also the last one, the fifth one. Beginner's mind is, there's a feeling of intimacy. There's a feeling of intimacy. We say interconnectedness. Interconnectedness is such a big word, and it has such an abstract feeling to it. Intimacy, if you can just forget the sexual limitation and think of real intimacy, intimacy is closer. It's close. That's what it is. It's a feeling of closeness. That six-year-old felt close to his sister, which was why he was ready to die for her. There was no close, but not close in a thinking way. That's not close enough. That's not close enough. As long as he was thinking, he wasn't ready to give the blood. Only when he stopped thinking. No, he had to go through that preparatory thinking. Yes, we go through that preparatory thinking. That's called koan in Zen. Koan. Intimate, close. Doesn't matter what it is. Doesn't matter, sick or well, or happy or sad. Close. Just let things be in their own way, and there will neither be coming nor going. Obey the nature of things, and you will walk freely and undisturbed. When thought is in bondage, the truth is hidden, for everything is murky and unclear. Murky and unclear. Murky and unclear. A man found an eagle's egg and put it in the nest of a backyard hen. The eagle hatched with a brood of chicks and grew up with them. All his life, the eagle did what the backyard chickens did, thinking he was a backyard chicken. He scratched the earth for worms and insects. He clucked and cackled, and he would thrash his wings and fly a few feet into the air. Years passed, and the eagle grew very old. One day he saw a magnificent bird far above him in the cloudless sky. It glided in graceful majesty among the powerful wind currents with scarcely a beat of its strong golden wings. The old eagle looked up in awe. "Who's that?" he asked. "That's the eagle, the king of the birds," said his neighbor. "He belongs to the sky. We belong to the earth. We're chickens." So the eagle lived and died a chicken, for that's what he thought he was. That's what he thought he was. So if you think that this mind of yours that's trying to get it right, that's trying to get some freedom, that's trying to have some love, this limited, fear-based mind is all there is, I feel sad. It's not all there is. It's not all there is. When it opens up, it's limitless. Joyful, intimate, generous, and not self-conscious. Not self-conscious. It's the same mind. Same mind. Don't be a chicken for the rest of your life, you guys.
What if you are a chicken?
If you're truly a chicken, then you're an eagle chicken. Just by being a chicken, completely being a chicken, then that's beginner's mind. A chicken who is completely a chicken is beginner's mind herself. Just laying eggs. She doesn't know anything. One leg after, egg after another. The farmer takes the egg. She still does her best to keep laying. Just a chicken. Beginner's mind. She's an eagle chicken. Right? When thought is in bondage, the truth is hidden, for everything is murky and unclear. The burdensome practice of judging brings annoyance and weariness. Doesn't it? Doesn't it bring annoyance and weariness? Jeez. Tim keeps telling me this, and I keep trying to sit, and doesn't work, and it works for a little while, and then I go back to the same old shit over and over again, right? Maybe I sow some roxu, and it helps a little for a while, and then I do something else, and annoying and weary, isn't it? The burdensome practice of judging brings annoyance and weariness. What benefit can be derived from distinctions and separations? I don't know why I got into all these stories today. But they're in this book, Soul Food. Soul Food. We call it No Soul Food in Zen. Okay. A lover pressed his suit with a woman unsuccessfully for months, suffering the atrocious pains of rejection. Rejection. Finally, his sweetheart yielded. "Come to such and such a place at such and such an hour," she said to him. At that time and place, the lover finally found himself seated beside his beloved. He then reached into his pocket and pulled out a sheaf of love letters that he had written to her over the past months. They were passionate letters, expressing the pain he felt and his burning desire to experience the delights of love and union. He began to read them to his beloved. Got it already, don't you? The hours passed by, but he still read on and on. Finally, the woman said, "What kind of a fool are you? These letters are all about me, and you're longing for me. Well, here I am, sitting with you at last, and you are lost in your stupid letters." Fear-based mind. Fear-based mind. Fear-based mind likes the idea of intimacy. Likes the idea of intimacy. But then when you're really there and you don't have any prop, it's hard to let go of. Just to be there with nothing to depend on, to use, no letter, no conversation that's worked out, just the rawness of the beauty of the other, the beauty of the other, right there. You need something because the beauty of the other might consume you. And you're afraid to be consumed because you've got to protect the fear-based body. But the beauty of the other is your own beauty. It's your own beauty. How else could it be? How else could it be? If you see it. The burdensome practice of judging brings annoyance and weariness. What benefit can be derived from distinctions and separations? If you wish to move in the one Tao, do not dislike even the world of sense and desire. Instead, accept them fully. Instead, to accept them fully is identical with enlightenment. So, we don't dislike even the world of sense and desire. We don't dislike even the fear-based mind. If we dislike the fear-based mind, then we create a new problem for ourselves, don't we? Fear-based mind has a function. It has a function. It's actually an important function. Important function. And desire and distinction are the tools that we use in our Zen practice, in our spiritual practice, desire and distinction. We use them. They're our tools. They help us. They help us. We have, so this week we're starting a practice period on Wednesday. That's which we do twice a year for 8 weeks, and people have to fill out a commitment sheet ahead of time before the first night. And basically they're committing to doing a daily sitting and doing a little bit of retreat time. And then they go over them with me briefly. And that's a tool. That's a tool to anchor yourself in the sitting process, to recommit yourself to the sitting process, and maybe to stretch yourself a little bit, not too much. And these sewing these raksus, which I do with people every 2 years, an initiation ceremony, that's a tool to help people in their sitting practice, and have faith that they can discover, that each of you can discover the beginner's mind for yourself. And it may go away, but you'll discover it again. Don't worry. The minute it goes away, you get self-conscious, and then you want it back. Well, then you're really stuck in the fear baseline. So it's kind of tricky, kind of tricky. Well, last story. One of the devotees in the Zen temple was well known for his zealousness and effort. When I was young, I was really zealous and full of effort. I still try to be, but my body won't cooperate anymore. My body heads to the bed. What can I do? Great joy, just heading upstairs to the bed. Why not? Why not? It's what is. Let's see. One of the devotees in the Zen temple was well known for his zealousness and effort. Day and night he would sit in meditation. Oh, I'm looking for a student like that. Day and night. Who's going to do that with me? Oh, I can't do it. I have to go to bed. You have to do it by yourself. It's even better. Ooh. Day and night, he would sit in meditation, not stopping even to eat or to sleep. As time passed, he grew thinner and more exhausted. When I was at Tassajara Zen Monastery in California, I was zealous and what's the word here? Zealous and all that stuff. And I focused so much on sitting that I lost a lot of weight. And I got down to 118 pounds. And Suzuki Roshi didn't tell me to stop either. He didn't say, hey, cool it. But it was good. I survived. Not only did I survive, I learned how to let go of fear-based mind. So, but be careful about doing too much of that stuff, you guys. A little bit is all right. If you do it, don't expect anything from it except getting thin. Really. As time passed, he grew thinner and more exhausted. The master of the temple advised him to slow down, to take more care of himself. But the devotee refused to heed his advice. Why are you rushing so? What's your hurry? Said the master. I'm after enlightenment, replied the devotee. There's no time to waste. And how do you know, asked the master, that enlightenment is running on before you and that you have to rush after it? Perhaps it is behind you, and all you need to encounter is to stand still, but you are running away from it. That's a wise teacher. A wise teacher. So the fear-based mind is always running away or toward or up or down or in or out. The beginner's mind is just still. Just where it is. That's the same mind, you guys. It's the same mind. And you can discover it and you can manifest it if you give yourself to meditation practice. No, I have no doubt about that. And I'm happy that I get to be your friend in this endeavor. I don't know all of you, but those of you whom I don't know, I'd be glad to be your friend and your coach in this endeavor. I'd be glad to. I'm very happy to be here with you. So, does anybody have any questions or comments?
I want to hear more about Betty.
About who?
About Betty.
Betty, oh, okay.
Because it is inspiring that Suzuki came to the tennis game not as a wise man or holy man, but since Betty had to come to the tennis game too.
That's right. Good point. Talk more about that.
Well, so she wasn't coming.
Yeah.
The story-wise.
Yeah.
Coming because she needed help, and she had to play this game of tennis that is maybe not what she expected of a tennis game, and just had she had to meet him.
Exactly, exactly. Very good, very good. I completely agree. She was a very sincere Zen student. She was a little Chinese woman. She and her sister were Chinese women, and they must have been second generation because they didn't have an accent. And she was a very sincere Zen student. And I don't know how I don't know who made the offer. That is, I don't know whether she said it to him or he said it to her. But she wanted to meet him. She wanted to encounter him because she wanted to encounter her beginner's mind. That's what she cared about. And we could say that in an act of playing tennis, she was fully engaged as he was. The beginner's mind was not just his. It was there on the tennis court. And was he giving something to her? Was she giving something to him? I don't know. I don't know. It's the beginner's mind. The beginner's mind doesn't know. The generosity flows all around, and it doesn't know it's generous. It's just the flow of life. But we dam that flow up when we get into this divided thing. So, thank you for pointing that out, Stacy. Thank you. Oh, hi.
What is that book? Could you tell us?
It's Soul Food. Stories of to nourish the spirit and the heart by Jack Kornfield and Christina Feldman. What else? Hi.
I have a question. I'd like to hear more about how your beginner's mind interacts with
what?
With the tea party.
With the tea party?
Tea party.
Oh, the tea party. Oh. How the beginner's mind interacts with the tea party. That's a good one, isn't it? Well, I mean, I'm just talking off the cuff. Well, that's what I'm supposed to do anyway, talk off the cuff. The beginner's mind feels the pain of the fear-based mind. And the fear-based mind wants guns. The fear-based mind needs protection. It needs to be with like-minded people. And people who will support it, people who won't diss it. And the mind of innocence, the beginner's mind feels empathy with the fears of others. It feels those fears. It knows those fears. Because the beginner's mind knows the manifestation as the fear-based mind, too. It's the same mind, so it knows those. So when it sees these people foaming at the mouth, and that's the fear-based mind's choice of terms, right? Because that immediately is a divided term, you know. They're foaming at the mouth. It feels compassion for them because it's, it's they're afraid. And I know fear. I know fear very well. I'm very intimate with fear. So my compassion for them is my compassion for myself, for my own fear. Does that make sense? Other people. Yeah.
I just think it's interesting. I don't have much to say about this, but that the beginner's mind is kind of seeing the fear-based mind like that. The fear-based mind thinks that beginner's mind is stupid. If you don't think enough, you're stupid.
Oh, yeah.
Thinking is what makes you smart.
Yeah.
And what makes you safe and gets the right gun, the right shells for the right gun.
Yeah.
The right locks for the door.
Yeah.
You know, that's all thinking, and so there's a lot of people in the world who think that this is a stupid practice.
Yeah.
Letting go of thoughts.
I know that.
Not accumulating thoughts.
I know that.
Threat insurance and, all of this stuff that, I mean, that's the standard for human beings right now is the fear-based.
That's right. Although our culture our culture in the last 40 years, since I've been practicing 45 years, has come to value the letting go process that takes place in meditation. More or less. Now, I don't know how many gun-toting people value that. But in our culture as a whole, there's been much more of an opening than when I was young to how letting go of your thoughts and all of your worries and fears and going to some still feeling is healthy. And that's becoming almost culturally normative. Don't you think? You do not think so.
No, not where I'm from.
No. Well, see, I'm from San Francisco, so. That's right.
And I do happen to know one person who owns guns that doesn't meditate.
One person who what?
Who owns guns and meditates.
Oh, hey. Uh-huh. Cool. 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 Anything else?
Right.
Yeah.
So,
sure.
I mean, there is this connection also between meditation and the samurai culture.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Meditation and
kamikaze. Yeah. Yep.
So, it's complicated.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yes. That's interesting. Uh-huh. And we could talk about that. Would you like to talk about that, or do you want to just go have some tea now? Well, that's true. That's true. And this is a legitimate. I guess I'm going to say something about it, since you don't want to say anything. This is a legitimate critique of Zen as it was practiced in a limited cultural milieu. That's not the limitless mind. But anytime we do this practice in a culture, we have to be careful because we can then bend this practice into the needs of the culture. It's said that some of the kamikazes in World War II, some of the best Japanese kamikazes who just killed themselves by flying, that they did some meditation, some zazen first. They were trained to do 2 minutes of zazen first. That's sad. I feel sad about that. But that happened. That happened. But that's not intimate. That's not generous. But it happened. It happened, and meditation can be used to ends that promote the fear-based mind, just like anything else. And that's an example. Is that it? Yeah. You want to say what?
I own a gun.
Okay. All right. You own a gun. All right. Good.
My father gave it to me.
All right.
His stepfather
died.
Uh-huh. And when my son is old enough, I plan to teach him how to use it so that he won't fear.
Oh, good. Good. Okay. There you go. Thank you.